رحم الله من قرأ الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيدنا ومولانا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع قلوبنا بالقاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المظلومين المنتجبين المنتخبين المعصومين الذين أضحب الله أنحم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من يوم عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم وقوله الحق وهو أصدق القائلين. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الدين عند الله الإسلام.
صلوات
الله سبحانه وتعالى. In the Holy Book of Quran says, the only religion in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is Islam. To be a Muslim and to be a mu'min, we have to follow all what is taught to us. We have to follow all the rules and regulations and all the obligations which are made upon us, be it the furu'e deen, ahkam, salat, fast, hajj, zakat, khums, be it those things which comes under the usul-e-deen, the roots of the religion. We have to be a mutawahid, the one who believes in one God. We have to be the followers of Prophet. We have to believe in the imamate of A'imma Tahireen. We have to believe in the Day of Judgment. So being a Muslim, there are certain things which we have to do, which we have to follow. And one of the things, one of the most important thing, if time comes, we have to be present in the battlefield. Sometimes, as I mentioned yesterday, that jihad can only take place with the presence of ma'soom. Offensive jihad. We can't attack anyone. We can't take things from anyone. If he is an enemy of Islam, until and unless he is not attacking on the Muslims, nobody has got the right for offensive jihad. My today's topic is Karbala, battlefield, or the manifestation of lessons of Islam. What do we see from Karbala? Most of the times, what happens in a majlis that we only happen to mention Karbala in our masail. At the end of the lecture, at the end of the majlis, there is a zikr of Karbala, and mostly it's a zikr. We only happen to mention one or two ashab or companions of Imam Hussein, or one or two members of Bani Hashim in one majlis. And most of the time, what happens, we only happen to mention the only those last moments of the companions of Imam Hussein or the members of the family of the Imam Hussein. We don't get the whole picture of Karbala. What happened over there? How was the strategy of Imam Hussein? Why that Imam Hussein reached Karbala on 2nd of Muharram, but the actual battle, the actual war happened on the day of Ashura, after 8 days, after 9 days, on the 9th day. What was going on in these 9 days, 8 days, which Imam Hussein had? Why wasn't there a war on the 3rd? Why wasn't there a war on the 4th? What were they waiting for? What was actually going on over there? So in today's lecture, we will be explaining, we will be examining the principles of war, and we will be seeing that principle of war in the strategy of Imam Hussein in Karbala. Please recite salawat. Whenever there is war, whenever there is a battle between the two groups, there are a few principles that everybody follows. The very first thing which the both parties, the both sides follow is the aim. The first principle is the aim of the war. Why are these two people or these two groups are fighting for? If you look into the wars which happens in this world, keeping aside this war which happened in Karbala, what happens, the aim and the objective of war of the both sides is to defeat the enemy and make him comply with our demands. This is what the aim of the war is. And make him so weak that he could not fight again. The most important thing is defeating him and making him so weak that he should not be able to stand again in front of the whoever is winning the war. But when we look at the Islamic perspective of a war, of the objective of a war, why there is an offensive war during the time of Prophet or during the time of Imam Ali, because apart from Imam Ali, nobody had the Khilafat, the ruling in their hands, so nobody else did the fighting. So what we see in the Seerah Nabawi or in the Seerah of Alawi, what we see, as Imam Ali himself explains in Nahjul Balagha, that the aim of offensive jihad is hidayat. And he explains with an example. I would like to explain, when there was a war of Siffin and Imam Ali was there present in the battlefield, and he had all the things available, he could have finished the war as soon as possible. He didn't have to give Muawiyah the time to reinforcement. He would have attacked with a surprise and he would have won the war with the very first or second day. But Imam Ali was staying over there as long as it possible. And everybody started questioning Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. And they asked Mawla, then why are you not attacking him? As the day was passing by, everybody was talking in those who were present in the army of Imam Ali. They were questioning Imam Ali, his bravery. And they were started to talking about, maybe Imam Ali is frightened. Maybe he is scared of Muawiyah. Maybe he's scared of losing the war. Imam Ali, when everybody came and Malik Ashtar came to Imam Ali and he told Imam Ali that people are talking about this thing, that you are scared, why are you not attacking? Imam Ali explained, I am waiting. Maybe there can be someone who wants to get hidayat. He wants to come down the right path. I am waiting for those people. Maybe they could come today, maybe they could come tomorrow. And another thing in the war is, a Muslim don't have the right to start the war. It is against the principle of Islam. One should not start the war. This is what you will see in Karbala. Imam Hussein didn't start the war. It was Umar al-Sa'd when he fired the first arrow and he said, bear witness in front of Ibn Ziyad and Yazid that I was the one who fired the first arrow. So the strategy and the principle of Islam doesn't allow the Islam, if you are one of the member of Islamic group, you are fighting on the side of Islam, you don't have the right to begin the war. This is the first objective, the aim should be clear. The second objective of a war is a strategy. A war should be fought with a strategy. It's not like, okay, we are gathered in the ground in a battlefield and now we should go on and fight. There has to be some strategies. We have to take care of everything. Like when there is an aim, the strategy follows the aim. Because when we don't want to kill a lot of people, well, the aim is the hidayat. We have to bring the people to the right path. We don't have to kill each and every one of them. If you see them during the wars which Prophet fought, most of them were ended in a day. Most of them, there were only few people killed. Because the objective of those wars, because if you see the life of Prophet Muhammad in the Medina, which was about 10 years, he fought around 80 to 90 wars, Ghazwa, in which he was present. So if you take an average of it, it's like 8 to 9 wars in every year. So if Prophet will be fighting the war, when will he be preaching? What will happen to the real Islam? So most of the times, as there were the tradition in the Arabs, they used to call a person, who can fight me? Is there anyone who can fight me? So what used to happen One person used to go in the battlefield and they used to fight, and that was a decision-making fight. You don't have to fight with the entire army. Two people used to come, they used to fight, and the war was decided on that fight only. So this is one strategy, because Islam wants to invite everyone else to the right part. They don't want to annihilate all everyone in the one tribe or in a town or in a village. They don't want to kill everyone, because the objective of the war is to invite people to the right part. The objective is not to loot and plunder. The objective is to bring people to the right path. This is the second thing, second principle, the strategy. The third thing is the simplicity of the strategy. Because most of the time, maybe you have a strategy, but it is so complicated that nobody knows when to do. The very tangible example is the Six-Day War of Israel versus the Arab League. What happened? How did all the Arab nations lost a war against one nation, one very small nation, who hardly had the numbers of the soldiers were less than what the Arab leagues had, but they lost the war in 6 days. It's a very famous war, Six-Day War. They call it Nakba, insult. What actually happened, because they were under surveillance and they changed all the codes, how they're going to coordinate with each other. And when they changed this policy, the strategy, they forgot to tell the rest of the people. And all of a sudden, when they went into the war, they didn't know how to coordinate with each other. Because Egypt was supposed to give them air support, and they need that, and the rest of the countries, they didn't know how to coordinate with them, with the Egyptians. So there's a loss of war, because there was a strategy, but it was so complex that they didn't know how to coordinate with each other. So the strategy has to be very simple. And when we look at the Karbala, the strategy is very simple. Imam Hussein doesn't have anything else to say. What he is trying to do is to invite people. And when he's leaving Medina, what he said is, I'm not going out and I don't want any kind of war, any kind of fight, but I'm going out for the Islah of the nation of my grandfather and my father. I want to bring the people to the right path. They're losing it. They're going out. This is not the real Islam. This is not the Islam which Prophet Muhammad brought. The Islam is going out of the path. I want to bring it back. I want to give the reform for the reformation of Islam. For the Islah Ummat Jaddi wa Abi. He's coming out for the Islah of the Ummat of his father and his grandfather. This is a simple strategy. If you move forward, the other thing, the strategy of war needs unity of command. There has to be one commander, one leader to lead a war. And if you see in the seerah of A'imma and in the seerah of Prophet, what you see is, for example, during the time of Prophet Muhammad, there was Prophet himself, there was Amir al-Mu'mineen, there was Imam Hassan, and there was Imam Hussain. Four Ma'sumeen were there, they were the Imam al-Ummah. They were the leaders. But when there was Prophet, Imam Ali used to follow the Prophet. There was only one person who was commanding, who was in charge of the whole Ummah. The second person, although he's there, he's following everything, step by step. But he's not giving any commands, because the commanding order has to be one person who has to take care of all the commanding things. There has to be only one commander. When you see in the Karbala, all you see is Imam Hussain. He's taking care of everything. Who has to be on the Naimana, the right flank? Who has to be on the left flank? Who has to be on the center? He's taking care of everything. He's deciding how to fight. He's deciding who has to go first. He's deciding when to go. If you move forward, and what you will see, one of the most important thing in Karbala and in every battlefield is a security measures. In a battlefield, one of the most important thing is you have to place yourself in such a place that you fight as long as it's possible. If you place yourself in the middle of the battlefield, you can get surrounded easily. What Imam Hussein did, because in the Rawaya it says, in the history which we'll read, the camp of Imam Hussein got shifted thrice. Once, when Imam Hussein reached Karbala, he placed his camp near the Furat. When Umar ibn Sa'd came and he ordered that we want to be this camp to be shifted from this Furat and get shifted to some other place, and Imam Hussein couldn't give the order to shift the camp because Abul Fadl al-Abbas placed the camp with his own hand, and he was ready to fight with the Umar Sa'd because he was prepared, he was being prepared, and he was preparing himself for the Karbala, and this was the battlefield he prepared himself his entire life to fight. It was very difficult to tell Abbas to move the camps from the side of, from the bank of the Euphrates, from the bank of the Furat. So Imam Hussein asked Sayyida Zainab to ask Abbas to shift the camps. That was the first time. Then again, it was shifted on the 7th because they wanted to keep them away as much as possible from the Euphrates so that they don't reach Euphrates and get water from it. So they were ordered to shift again. And then again, on the night of 9th, like today's night, Shabi Ashur, they were ordered again. Imam Hussein this time ordered and shuffled the camps of Bani Hashim in such a way that so that they could fight as long as they can. I will explain to you inshallah later what was the formation of the camps and how Imam Hussein fought for so long, because there were 30,000 people who were ready to attack the Imam Hussein and his companions. There were just 72 people. Imagine how they survived for about half day, for about 8 to 9 hours, the offensives, the attacks of Bani Umayyah. How they survived. One of the most important thing, again, is the maneuver of your power. When we see these things, when we see that the army is doing maneuvers, they're not fighting anyone, but they are trying to show the power to others, to the enemy nations, that this is the power we possess. Even in today's world, you see a lot of maneuver going on all around the world. In South Korea, in Middle East, everywhere, the nations are trying to show their power, how powerful they are, and they're ready to face any country, any enemy. And this is what Umar Sa'd was doing. He ordered his army, all the horsemen, to ride the plains of Karbala, so that this scares the Imam Hussein and his companions. There were small children, as young as Ali Asghar, who was just 6 months old. And imagine 15,000 horses running outside your camp, what will be the position of the children in the camp of Imam Hussein? How they were surviving in such a horrific situation? How they were holding up against all these forces surrounding him? This was the power, this was the thing they were trying to show, that they were trying to show their power, and they were trying to make Imam Hussein pledge the allegiance to Yazid. One of the reasons there was no fight until day of Ashura was because of Umar al-Sa'd. When Umar al-Sa'd was asked to go and take the allegiance from Imam Hussein in Kufa, when Ibn Ziyad came to Kufa dressed like Imam Hussein and everybody welcomed him in the Kufa, and when he went to the court, the Darul Imara, he called and he asked everyone, "I want someone from this court to go and take the allegiance from Imam Hussein for Yazid ibn Muawiyah." And nobody was ready to do that. So he asked Umar al-Sa'd, "You're going to go and get the allegiance from Imam Hussein. And in reward, you will be given the Ray, the ruler of, you'll become the ruler of Ray, which is in Iran." And he always wanted to become the ruler of Ray. So he said, "I want a time, I want to think." Because he was the son of Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, who was the companion of Prophet and companion of Amir al-Mu'mineen. It was a difficult task for him to go and fight with Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. So he asked for the time and he said, "I want to think about it and I'll let you know tomorrow." Umar Sa'd goes back and thinks about it, and he comes back the next day and sees Ibn Ziyad and tells him that, "I'm not ready to go and fight Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam." Then what Ibn Sa'd did, he threatened him, "If you will not go and take allegiance, take bayat from Imam al-Hussein, I will behead you and your family will be tortured." So because of that threatening of Ibn Ziyad, he becomes ready. Every member of his family were against it. Everybody, a lot of the family member in the morning came to Ibn Umar al-Sa'd and talked to him like, "Dude, don't do this. This is actually going against the grandson of Prophet. He is Sayyid al-Jannah. Why do you want to go and fight with Imam Hussein?" But since he got threatening from Ibn Ziyad, he becomes ready and he leaves Karbala. He leaves Kufa to Karbala. And now when he reached Karbala, he's trying to find out some thing in the Middle East, so that he doesn't want war. He doesn't want to get into the war. He doesn't want to martyr Imam Hussein. He doesn't want to kill Imam Hussein. He's trying to find out a solution. But when on the 9th, Shawr bin Zilchoshan reaches Karbala and he hands over a letter from Ibn Ziyad, and he says, "You have only one day. Either you're going to take the allegiance from Imam Hussein, or you're going to kill him, or you're going to behead him." So what he does, he comes to Imam Hussein for the final time, and it was him along with his son and one slave. On the other side, it was Imam Hussein, it was Abu al-Fadl Abbas and Ali Akbar. And they came to a conclusion that it has to be the war is going to happen tomorrow. And Imam Hussein said, La yubayu misli mithla. A person like me doesn't pledge allegiance to a person like Yazid. This is a universal quote. This is, doesn't belongs to 1400 years ago. This even belongs today. We should know the Yazid. We should know the Yazid of our time. We should understand the Karbala. We should know who is the Hussein of the time. We have to be prepared. We should know that what is right and what is wrong. We have to be prepared. We should not come into the pressure of someone who is, if he is pressuring you to do something wrong. Imam Hussein was in the worst position. He was just 72. He was in, the numbers are so small in front of 30,000. They were so outnumbered, but still he didn't pledge allegiance, because the aim was there to save Islam. If the aim today is to save Islam, we should be prepared, we should be ready to do whatever it takes to save Islam. On the day of Ashura, when Ashura, the morning comes up, and the first arrow was fired by Umar al-Sa'd, the history says there were 5,000 arrows fired along with Umar al-Sa'd. And there were about 30 of the companions of Imam Hussein died in that very first instance. The reason why the war lasted so long was that the Imam Hussein shifted the camp in a place where there was trees of dates on the backside of the camp. A huge forest on the back of the camp. And he dig a khandaq, like what did what Prophet did in the Battle of Khandaq. He dig the khandaq behind all the camps and filled it with the sticks and wood and burned it up. And there was so much of smoke that Umar al-Sa'd and his army couldn't see the camps of Imam Hussein. So they actually were trying to cover the attack from the behind. If there will be an attack from the behind, they won't be able to last long. And they will be defeated in the very first hour. So Imam Hussein dig this khandaq and lighted it up so that there should be no attack from the back. And what he did, he placed camp in a shape of U, in a semicircle, so that there should be only one opening, and the army of Umar al-Sa'd can only come from one side, so that we could face them easily. Because when there will be only one opening, it will be really difficult to enter a large number of forces. That is why they have given so many of them were killed because of this strategy of Imam Hussein. And then Umar al-Sa'd ordered to burn the camps. When Imam Hussein, everybody attacked again the camp of Imam Hussein to burn the camps, Imam Hussein said very calmly, "Leave them. Da'uhum. لِيَحْرَقُوهَا. Leave them, let them burn it." Because the first few camps were empty. It was belonging to the companions of Imam Hussein. They were all in the battlefield. Imam Hussein said, "Let them burn it. When they will burn it, they won't be able to get into the camps. They won't be able to attack us. It will be burning camps. They won't be able to cross the fire. Let them burn it." And the other thing, in the Arabs, as I said, during the time of Prophet and afterward Prophet, there was a tradition, they used to call, "If there is anyone who can fight me." That is how the Imam Hussein and the companions lasted so long. When like I recited on the 7th, when Qasim went to fight, there was this Arzak from Sham. He was very famous for his bravery. People used to say that he can face 1,000 people alone, 1,000 warriors alone. When Umar Asad told Arzak, go and fight this son of Hassan, he said, this is disrespect for me, that I'm going to go and fight a 13-year-old. Then he said, I'm going to send one of my son. He sent the eldest one, and Qasim ibn Hassan killed him. He sent his second son, Qasim ibn Hassan killed him. The third one and the fourth one, he got so angry, he came to the battlefield and Qasim ibn Hassan killed him. Because Qasim ibn Hassan is not a normal person. He is a 13-year-old kid. He's a 13-year-old boy. But he is not a normal boy. He is a son of the Fatih Jamal. His father was the Fatih Jamal. The battle of Jamal was won by Imam Hassan. People think that he was so... he was not a kind of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein was very aggressive, that's why he fought. Imam Hassan was not so brave, so he did what he did. He did the sulh with Muawiyah. No. If anybody will read the history of the Battle of Jamal, he will see that Imam Ali first sent his other son. And when he went to kill the camel, he couldn't. He came back, and then it was Muhammad ibn Hanafiya. Muhammad ibn Hanafiya is very famous for his bravery. Imam Ali sent Muhammad ibn Hanafiya to kill the camel, but he couldn't kill it. He came back. Then Imam Ali sent Hassan ibn Ali. He sent Imam Hassan, and Imam Hassan killed it and came back. And what Imam Ali said, you are my son. He called Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, you are my son, you are only my son. But Hassan is also the son of Fatima bint Rasulullah. So Imam Hassan, the Qasim ibn Hassan was the son of Imam Hassan. His bravery is famous. So that is how one by one Imam Hussein used to send one by one. He sent Akbar once, then he sent Qasim, then he sent other Bani Hashim, then he sent other companions. That is how the war actually lasted for so long. When Qasim killed Arzak, and nobody else was daring to attack Qasim, because Arzak was so famous for his bravery. So what they did, they attacked him in the group. They attacked Qasim, the 13-year-old boy. And a number of over 500 of them all attacked Qasim alone. They shot arrow at him. They attacked him with a sword. Some people attacked him with the stones. Imagine a 13-year-old was surviving this. This is how the war lasted. I would like to recite the Masaib today of someone whose voice can be heard today, but he could not speak. How? That when Imam Hussein took him to the battlefield, and Umar Asad called Hurmula, and he said, Iqta kalam al-Husayn. It was 6 months old. He wasn't able to talk, he wasn't able to speak. But he was speaking in his own language. Please recite salawat so that I could begin the Masaib. روز عاشورا جب خیمے خالی ہو گئے
جب اصحاب شہید ہو گئے, جب بنی ہاشم میں کوئی نہ رہا, تب میرا مولا میدان کربلا میں یکا و تنہا کھڑا ہوا ہے. کبھی داہنے دیکھتا ہے, کبھی بائیں دیکھتا ہے, اور آواز استغاثہ بلند کرتا ہے, ہل من ناصر ینصرنا, ہل من مغیث یغیثنا, ہے کوئی جو میری مدد کرے, ہے کوئی جو میری نصرت کو آئے. جیسے ہی مولا کی آواز استغاثہ خیمے میں موجود اس چھوٹے سے بچے کے کانوں میں گئی, اس نے اپنے آپ کو جھولے سے گرا دیا. مولا اپنی آواز استغاثہ میدان کربلا میں بلند کر رہے تھے کہ اچانک خیمے میں کہرام برپا ہوا. مولا پلٹ کر خیمے میں آئے, اے زینب ابھی تمہارا بھائی زندہ ہے, یہ کہرام کیسا ہے, یہ گریا وزاری کیسی ہے. ایک مرتبہ بہناب زینب نے اپنے بھائی سے کہا, بھیا حسین تمہاری آواز استغاثہ سن کر علی اصغر نے اپنے آپ کو جھولے سے گرا دیا. امام حسین نے کہا, تو تم اس کو کوئی چپ کرانے والا کیوں نہیں ہے, رباب کہاں ہے؟ اے مولا یہ کسی کے پاس جانے کو تیار نہیں ہو رہا ہے, بڑا بے چین ہے. مولا نے کہا, لاؤ علی اصغر کو مجھے دے دو. روایت لکھتی ہے کہ مولا نے علی اصغر کے کان میں کچھ کہا, نہ کوئی راوی نقل کر سکا, نہ کسی تاریخ نے اس کو ذکر کیا ہے, لیکن اتنا سننا تھا کہ مولا نے جیسے ہی علی اصغر کے کان میں کچھ کہا, علی اصغر ہمک کے مولا کی گود میں آ گئے. اب مولا ہے کہ اب یہ چاہتے ہیں کہ علی اصغر کو لے کے خیمے سے باہر جائیں. یہ چھوٹا سا بچہ ہے, بڑے والے تو سب شہید ہو گئے ہیں, وہ تو سب اس لائق تھے کہ جنگ کر سکتے, لیکن مولا نے سوچا کہ اس ننھے علی اصغر کو لے کر جاؤں, شاید فوج اشقیا میں کسی کو اس کے اوپر رحم آ جائے, شاید کوئی اس ننھے سے بچے کو سیراب کر دے. مولا جیسے ہی خیمے سے نکلنے لگے, دیکھا خیمے کے دروازے پر رباب کھڑی ہے. اے رباب تم یہاں کیوں کھڑی ہو؟ جیسے ہی سوال ہوا رباب نے کہا, اے مولا جب صبح سے کوئی مقتل میں گیا ہے, کوئی واپس نہیں آیا, میں کیسے علی اصغر کو جانے دوں؟ مولا نے کہا, اے رباب مقتل میں جو کوئی بھی گیا ہے وہ جنگ کرنے کے لیے گیا ہے, لیکن یہ ننھا سا بچہ یہ تو جنگ کرنے کے لائق بھی نہیں ہے, میں اس کو سیراب کرانے لے جا رہا ہوں, میں ابھی سیراب کرا کر لاتا ہوں. عزیزان محترم, علی جناب امام حسین نے علی اصغر کو اپنے آغوش میں لیا, ابا کے دامن سے ڈھکا. اب میدان کربلا میں آتے ہیں, آنے کے بعد دشمن سمجھتا ہے کہ حسین بیعت کرنا چاہتے ہیں, اپنے ہاتھوں میں قرآن لے کر آتے ہیں. جیسے ہی میرے مولا نے ابا کے دامن کو الٹا, دیکھا کہ ایک ننھا سا بچہ ہے. مولا نے کہا, اے اشقیا اگر تمہاری نگاہ میں گنہگار ہوں تو اس سے ماں کے بچے نے تمہارا کیا بگاڑا ہے؟ اسے نہ تین دن سے بھوت نہیں ملا ہے, یہ تین دن کا بھوکا و پیاسا ہے, اسے ایک قطرے آپ دے دو. اتنا سننا تھا کہ فوج اشقیا میں کہرام برپا ہو گیا. اگر تمہیں ایسا لگتا ہے کہ شاید میں پانی کو پی لوں گا, تو لو میں اس ننھے سے بچے کو اس جلتی ہوئی ریت پر رکھ دیتا ہوں, کوئی آئے اور آنے کے بعد اسے سیراب کر دے. کوئی نہ آیا, کسی نے جواب نہ دیا, لوگ ادھر گریا کر رہے ہیں, آنکھوں سے آنسو بہا رہے ہیں, لیکن کوئی آواز سے استغاثہ سننے والا نہیں ہے. اے بیٹا اصغر تم اپنی حجت کو اپنے سے تمام کر دو. ایک مرتبہ ننھے سے اصغر نے سوکھی جھکی ہوئی زبان اپنے خشک لبوں پر میری اتنا دیکھنا تھا کہ فوج اشقیا میں برپا ہو گیا, مصیبتیں آ گئی. اتنا دیکھنے کے بعد عمر سعد نے آواز دیا, آئینہ آئینہ ہرملا ہرملا کہاں ہے, اقضا کلام الحسین, آؤ حسین کے کلام کو منقطع کر دو. ایک مرتبہ ایسا تیر چلا, بچہ باپ کے آغوش میں منقلب ہو گیا. اب امام حسین ہے کہ خیمے کی طرف واپس جانا چاہتے ہیں, لیکن سمجھ نہیں پا رہے کہ رباب کو کیا جواب دوں گا. میں نے رباب کو وعدہ کیا تھا کہ میں علی اصغر کو سیراب کرا کر لاؤں گا. کبھی آگے جاتے ہیں انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون, کبھی پیچھے آتے ہیں انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون, کبھی پھر آگے جاتے ہیں انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون. درے خیمے پر پہنچے, جیسے ہی آواز سنا کہ مولا درے خیمے پر آئے ہیں, جیسے ہی آواز ہوئی ایک طرف سے رباب دوڑی کہ میرا بچہ واپس آ گیا ہے, میرا بچہ سیراب ہو چکا ہے, اور ایک دوسری طرف سے ایک چار سال کی بچی دوڑی. اے بابا اصغر زیادہ پیارے تھے, اصغر کو سیراب کرانے آئے. جیسے ہی دبا کے دامن کو الٹا, چار سال کی بچی نے کہا, اے بابا کیا میدان جنگ میں اتنے چھوٹے بچے بھی نہر کر دیے جاتے ہیں. مولا نے علی اصغر کو لیا, پشت خیمہ میں گئے. اب جانے کے بعد ذوالفقار سے قبر کھود رہے ہیں. ذوالفقار سے قبر کھودتے وقت جیسے ہی انہوں نے سنا کہیں سے گریا کی آواز آ رہی ہے, کہیں سے رونے کی آواز آ رہی ہے. ایک مرتبہ متوجہ ہوئے, ایک مرتبہ متوجہ ہوئے کہ ذوالفقار گریا کر رہی ہے. اے آقا مجھے آسمان سے بھیجا گیا تھا کہ دشمنوں کو فنار کروں گی, مجھے آسمان سے بھیجا گیا تھا کہ دشمنوں کو جہنم کی رواوا کھلاؤں گی, یہ مجھے نہیں پتا تھا کہ مجھے یہ دن بھی دیکھنا پڑے گا کہ میں ننی سی قبر مجھے کھودنا پڑے گا. حسین چپ کے, حسین ننی سی قبر کھود کر اصغر کو گاڑ کے شبیر اٹھ کھڑے ہوئے, دامن کو جھاڑ کے. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا اي منقلب ينقلبون انا لله وانا اليه راجعون. بار الہ ہماری اس مختصر سی عزا کو قبول فرما, بار الہ ہم میں جو مریض ہیں انہیں شفاء کامل و عاجل عنایت فرما, بار الہ ہم میں جو مقروض ہیں ان کے قرض کی غیب سے ادائیگی فرما, بار الہ ہم میں جو حج و زیارات سے مشتاق ہیں ان کو حج و زیارات سے مشرف فرما, بار الہ ہمارے امام زمانہ کے ظہور میں تعجیل فرما, اور ہم سب کو ان کے عوان و انصار میں شمار فرما. ربنا تقبل منا انک